Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Welcome to Onceable episode 70, where we'll be talking about the season 5 premiere of Once Upon a Time entitled Dark Swan. I'm joined tonight by Karen, Kristen, and Laura. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
So we're all back except for Jen, who's a little under the weather today, but that's okay. How was everyone's hiatus? Was it good?
Yeah, it was fun. I'm excited to have Once Upon a Time back, but it was okay.
Yeah, same here. I didn't do anything Once Upon a Time related over the hiatus, and it was kind of wonderful, because now we're back in full year.
Yeah, we had our Comic-Con fix. That was good. We saw them at Comic-Con.
Oh, right, so that was right.
Yeah. Yeah, saw them at Comic-Con. That was fun. But other than that, yeah, just a break. Breaks are good. Makes you appreciate things, so... I'm excited to have it back.
Yeah, me too. So we discovered that Once Upon News, our Twitter account, has like 10,000 followers. So we're going to try and get up on that this season. So if you want to reach us, you can comment, as always, on this post at hypeable.com. Or you can try and tweet us at Once Upon News. We're going to try and keep up with that this year. And, you know, any of the posts that I or anyone else writes on Hypeable or Fair Game. I don't usually check the comments because people are like, you spelled Merida wrong. And I'm like, I know, I'm going back and fixing it. But if you have any helpful criticism, I will gladly read the comments. So our instant reactions to this episode, let's start with Laura. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs up. I pretty much liked it. A couple of things I was like mildly annoyed about it, but all in all, I really liked it, and I wasn't sure I was going to like the whole Dark Swan concept, but I was good with this one.
Awesome. And Karen, you've been quiet. What did you think?
two thumbs way up, to quote Hercules, or Hades, rather. Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was such a strong open for season 5, and, you know, sometimes Once Upon a Time is kind of like touch and go with me. Sometimes I really like it. Other times I'm just like, all right, let's get to the finale already, because they usually do their finales really well. But this premiere was really solid in my mind, and it makes me really excited for the rest of the season.
Awesome. And Kristen?
I agree. It's a thumbs up for me too. I just really liked the whole tone of it. Like, from, you know, what we kind of were expecting to see from Emma, like her kind of trying to put her darkness down, to the end of the episode which was kind of a shock, and it was good. It was a strong way to start season 5.
And I agree. I'm more so on the side of Karen, two thumbs way up. I am excited to see where we're going to go. I am so thrilled we're not splitting a season in half anymore. I'm over trying to shove as many characters as you can into 13 episodes, and I'm glad that we have a full, like, 23 episodes to just really hash out this storyline. Even though the premiere felt like there was a lot in it, it didn't feel as forced. Like, there was a lot given to you, but I know that we have 23 episodes to drag it out.
Yeah, I would totally agree with it. Like, my husband last year just kept calling Once Upon a Time the Frozen commercial, because he just felt like it had nothing to do with anything, and it really kind of turned him off to it. And he really does like watching it with me. And I agree. I don't know anything about Brave. I am a total Brave virgin here. And it just didn't feel like, oh, let's stuff this next item down our throats. So I was okay with it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to a lot of the stuff that's going to come this season. As just a refresher for the people who are tuning in again this season of Onceable, I cover Once Upon a Time, so I am up on all of the news and what's going on and what's coming this season, and I'm going to try not to give anything away this during the podcast, because I have to know like 6 episodes ahead as to what's coming. But yeah, I think that this season's going to be really good, and I'm excited. So if you have any questions, you could tweet me at BRITLovely237 because I have read every interview that's happened for the show. So we could talk spoilers if you want. But let's move on to what actually happened in this episode with our favorite quotes. So Karen, what was your favorite quote?
Okay, mine was from Merida, who I absolutely loved in this episode. And no, I'm not doing this in a Scottish accent, but it was when she was talking to Emma and she was basically like, thank you for showing me that I have, you know, darkness in me too, but I've decided to give people mercy. And then she goes, but someone's going to get a right good punch in the gut for putting me through this, then mercy. And I was just like, that's so Merida. They did a really good job with her.
Yeah, I agree. Merida was so good. Kristen, what was your favorite quote?
Mine comes from Henry, and it's when him and Hook are, like, breaking into, like, the psycho ward where Zelina's being held. And Henry says, my mother's good with magic, not with passwords. She uses my birth date for everything. And I just thought it was hysterical that that's probably the easiest way for Regina to remember anything password-wise in this world.
That was really cute. Laura, what was your favorite?
I usually don't go for Rumple quotes, but this one literally had me laugh out loud, is when Glasgow's favorite son, Robert Carlyle, says, don't you think the accent is a wee bit much when talking to Merida? That really cracked me up because I've seen him and Colin O'Donoghue like talk on a panel and people say like nobody knows what the two of them are talking about when they get going. And then we have this new Scottish lass and Rumple's the one picking on her accent. So I thought that was actually like pretty hilarious.
So that's great. I think the two of them together, first of all, I love Rumple's new role in this season so far because it's so good. It's like classic Rumple, and then the bad guy's just in a coma, which is perfect for me anyway. But my favorite quote was no surprise from Captain Hook himself, who is talking to Regina, who's trying to use the wand of light magic. She can't, and he's like, enough, you're going to embarrass yourself, because she cannot summon enough darkness anymore because she's gone a bit soft after, you know, working so hard to become a hero that, you know, she's just not as full of darkness as she once was. But Hook was very sassy this episode, which made me extremely happy.
You know what? And I was really curious. Like, when I saw that part, I was wondering if, like, I was like, okay, Hook, like, grab the wand with her and do it, because I felt like he had still done, like, enough kind of underhanded things last year. I mean, he's not like really evil, but I was like, I wonder if there's enough residual in there for him and her to team up. I was like kind of almost leaning that way for a little bit.
I feel like he could, but I also think he's not magical. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't possess that.
That's a good point.
That bit of energy to produce magic. But I think that he has definitely enough darkness in him. Even though it's still like, when we saw his heart last season, it was just a little like dark speck. It wasn't as much as Rumple's heart, but it's still in him. But I think everyone's got a little darkness.
Yeah, he was definitely very angry. I was like, wow, we've seen Hook angry, but I just felt like we had not seen him this consistently angry. Like, I was like, you know, her parents are taking this better than you are. Like, I was interested in like how like angsty Hook was.
Yeah, so let's start there. We won't go to the Enchanted Forest yet. Let's start like after the dagger falls and Hook kind of picks it up to summon the Dark One, as one would, because Emma should essentially, by the rules of it, come to him if he holds the dagger. But she's in this other world, so we're kind of dealing with all of the heroes, as we'll refer to them, in Storybrooke, trying to figure out their next step. And Hook is just so angsty and like just he kind of resorts to that persona that we only really see in flashbacks. So what did you guys think of Hook? Kristen and Karen, Lauren and I kind of talked about what we think, but what did you guys think of Hook?
Well, between him and Regina and the lines they kept snapping back at each other this episode, like, I liked the attitude because, honestly, like, he just got Emma back, like, you know, like they thought everything was peachy keen and then the whole darkness thing happens and she gets sucked away. Like, I can see where it would be incredibly devastating to him. So like it literally just happened. So I can see why he hasn't had time to process. We have, because we've had 3 months, but like for him, there wasn't a whole lot of time. So I can kind of understand why he's so upset and like thick and kind of intense about it. And him and Regina snap at each other the whole time. It worked for me. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, I'll have to agree. I think, you know, Hook's attitude, I love that side of him. I love the sort of like cocky, mean kind of side to Hook, because it reminds me of when we first met him. And that's, you know, basically when everyone fell in love with him. But I will have to say I'm a little bit worried, because I don't know what lengths he'll go to get Emma back, and I don't want him to fall back into being the bad guy and maybe going too far to get her back, or maybe doing, you know, kind of joining her side when she becomes the dark one. So I'm just holding out hope that he'll continue to be the Hook that Emma wants him to be.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, was like, do you think that this, like, because it's someone he loves and he doesn't want to lose that person again, like, is he going to go too far?
Yeah, I think he definitely would. Like, I think he's the weakest. I mean, of the people who, you know, then later on go back, and obviously we'll get to that. I think he is absolutely the weakest link in the chain, without question. I mean, even down to last year, he was the one who kind of had put himself into awkward positions with Rumple, and granted, he ended up doing some things not realizing what would happen, but I feel like he is the most susceptible to say the ends justify the means.
And I mean, if you think about it, last year was kind of Regina's year of turmoil. Like, how far does she have to go before she can see the light? Maybe this is Hook's year. Like, with everything going on, you've got this whole, you know, we must save Emma thing, but it's maybe it's how far will Hook go? Because honest to God, I think that's a really interesting story. Like, he starts out this villain. He's kind of become a de facto good guy, but he hasn't had, like, a major struggle with it yet. Like, we've seen him have some tough moments, but no, like, nothing like Regina's gone through. So maybe this season will be that struggle for him.
Yeah, that's a good point, especially because the only struggle we really saw him have on the tail end of last season, Rumple had his heart. So it really wasn't him struggling against, like, you know, choosing between good and evil. Like, he didn't have any control over it. So that's a good point. I think we're due for a Hook tale.
Yay.
Yay. I mean, listen, I know I'm hosting, so I could really turn this into the Hook show, but I will try to respect the listeners and not just focus on Colin O'Donoghue for the whole episode. Speaking of not focusing on Colin O'Donoghue, let's move to Regina for a little bit. This woman cannot catch a break. She has to be the one to put aside everything else that's going on and say, okay, we need to focus on Emma, even though she really doesn't want to. She's angry once the dagger falls. She's like, well, she's the idiot who decided to sacrifice herself and not let me do it. But, I mean, she's got to, like, she really has to come into her own this season, and I'm very excited about it. So what are you guys looking forward to the most with Regina coming in into this season?
Oh, man. I just want her, like, I'm so glad that Emma took the dagger, because if Regina had done it, we basically would have been exploring the same plot points we have been for the last 4 seasons. And I was just so over that. So I'm kind of ready for her to just continue to go in the same direction, even to be sort of like, I don't know, just, you know, going on the same wavelength for a while and not really going up and down, because we've seen so much of her all over the board. I kind of just want her to stay the same for a little while. And the fact that she has come so far since season 1 is my favorite thing about the show. So as long as she continues to be that good person and continues to feel that responsibility to help save Emma, because Emma basically sacrificed herself for her, I am so there for that.
I'm really into, I want to see where she and Robin go with their relationship. I'm also curious what happens between her and Selena, because at the end, when they, like, all came back, you know, when they take the Granny's Diner, which I just love, the Ozzy in the diner goes to, you know, back with them in the tornado. That was like hilarious. But Zelina was tied up to a chair during that scene. So they had taken Zelina with them to the diner and tied her to a chair. Now, when they come back, Zelina is wearing like castle garb, and she did not appear to me to be in handcuffs or bound up or anything like that. So she seems to be, you know, whatever transpires, she doesn't seem to be tied up or anything like that. So I'm kind of curious as to what happens with that relationship, that we're at least not tying her up anymore.
Yeah, so let's talk about Zelina for a bit, because I loved her. I loved her last season. I think that she is the best, like, antagonist that the show has seen in a while. And when she came back this season, I was very, very excited. So they kind of go to Zelina because she has the darkest magic around, and she's willing to literally do anything, like cut off her own hand to get out of the magical, you know, locks that she's in. But she, I think that she's going to play a huge role this season, especially because I have a feeling that, you know, she's going to deliver a child by the end. So right. There's a lot of, like, personal stuff going on between her, Regina, and Robin. But at the same time, they have this, like, other thing that really needs to be taken care of, or the world is basically going to end, as always. So what do you think Zelina's role is going to be? I know, Laura, you were saying like how we saw her chained up and then unchained. So what do you think her role in Camelot's going to be? Because we kind of have this whole blank slate to play with for 6 weeks.
I like just like the whole idea. I mean, like, if they're going to go down the whole like Camelot or Disney version of Camelot with the sword and the stone and all that. I mean, like, there was obviously like King Arthur and Lancelot and Guinevere and Merlin and all of that. But there are also, like quote-unquote, evil witches that are like, battles. So if Zelina is not going to get mixed up with some of the negative magical forces in Camelot and how that affects her. Because, I mean, it just seems like in the end, like, Zelina's pretty straightforward about what her one goal is. Her one goal is that she does not feel loved, and that she is having this baby because this baby will love her. Now, as warped and as ridiculous as is, like, she's pretty clear about what she wants. So I'm just curious how she's going to make everything achieve that goal. And I'm curious how that comes about in a warped little mind.
Yeah, especially since she was ready to just flee over the rainbow at the beginning of this episode when she was free with the wand. She was just like, sign up.
Right, to tell you that sounded like a pretty solid plan to me. Like, let's just get out of here, take the kid to somewhere I know where I'm the bad guy, I'm the one everyone fears, it'll all be me, and be good. Like, it sounded like a solid idea.
Right, so, like, I'm not clear, like, what... Like, or I don't know, like, maybe she's just not thinking beyond the next minute. I don't know. Like, I'm just curious to see, like, what are her, you know, what are her, like, goals here? What is she going to do to achieve that? So I don't know. I'm like, really curious. And I'm still, like, oddly, like, horrified that she still keeps, like, reconnecting with Robin, even though this is his sort of unwilling child. Like, it's just so completely horrible anyway. So I don't know.
When she took the form of Regina, I couldn't handle it. I was like, oh, go away.
Like, I know. I was like, I like right away. I was like right away. I was like, nope. That's not her. And then I was like, glad Robin figured it out like immediately, but still.
Yeah, it wasn't like months and months where he thought he was living with his dead wife.
Yes, which is just so, like, yeah. I'm like, okay, so homicidal murderer is still in our midst. Good to know.
But this homicidal murderer brought together two other important characters in Emma's life, and personally loved this whole storyline of Hook going to Henry and being like, kid, you still got that quill? You want to write me a new ending here? And he's like, Bond, you know, if I have a Harry Potter complex. So they decide to create this little break-in to the jail in order to harvest Selena's power. But I just loved that whole moment of them kind of bonding, because it's been kind of touch and go since Anne and Hook started seeing each other. We haven't really seen Henry and Hook together except for that like comical moment in Shattered Sight in like Frozen arc, where Henry is sort of like, you know, yelling at Hook because he has spell over him. But what do you guys think of that relationship? Because they've sort of been like off screen spending time together. Like Hook has taken him sailing and stuff like that. I do too.
I think it's awesome. But go on. I just love it because I feel like Henry, like it's teenage Henry, like he needs somebody who's not prim and proper to hang out with. And I just think Hook kind of fits the bill. Plus, I don't know, I'm still like holding out hope that Henry has some sort of love interest. He's like the only like hormonally balanced teenager we've ever seen. So I don't know. I kind of love Hook being in his life and then being like rebels together.
Yeah, and I hope there's a moment where Hook has to offer him some advice, because, listen, David, I wouldn't go to David for dating advice. It seems like a one and done, but Hook might have a little more to say about a first date.
Hook's got some years under his belt, man. He's a pirate. Who do you ask?
Pirate.
See, that worries me a little bit, though, because when Hook was going up to Henry, I was like, what are you doing? Don't start having a bad influence on him now. I mean, I love Hook and I love his kind of rugged ways and how he's a little dastardly and stuff like that. But I don't think Henry needs that. And I do worry a little bit if he continues to push Henry, you know, we got to save your mom. We got to save your mom. We have to do whatever we need to do. If that's going to have any sort of effect on Henry.
That's a good point, though. I because Henry is one of those people who always wants to do the right thing and wants to see the best in people, and he would see Hook, that being the best in Hook, which could be kind of dangerous, especially for Henry. He'll get mixed up in something and not be able to get out of it. So let's get into the diner. Let's take Granny's deep fryers through a portal and wind up in the Enchanted Forest if we can. But before we go, our dear, dear friend, the town crier, Leroy.
Oh my gosh.
I'm sorry. I just have to say, I feel like they broke the fourth wall so many times in this episode, and they just know what Grumpy does to us when he is the town crier, and he's like, plus he was like, hey, you know, I'm tired of sitting on the sidelines. Like, where have we been these past several seasons? We don't even do anything anymore. We never go on the adventures. And I was like, God, that is so true. And I love that they were talking about it. And I love that he ended up going with them.
To the Snow, you never take us on adventures anymore. Like, he, like, laid it on Snow. And she was like, I love you. Like, let's go. You can stay.
But, like, they didn't bring all of them. They left others of them behind in the town. Although, I have to say, that was hilarious in of itself. But, yeah, I was like, okay, so only half the dwarves get to go on the adventure. That was a little weird.
Yeah, and you know who else was not around to go on the adventure? Will Scarlet, but whatever. Once Upon a Time hates him, so it's fine.
Oh, well.
I know, but we're gonna pack up Zelina and bring her with
us. Yeah,
right?
What is that about?
Well, that and the other thing too. No, so here's one that's weird. I love that Granny's greatest item of concern during this was like stowing the fryer grease. Like that was her big thing, and she's yelling at some unknown dude who presumably they've taken with them to like. Like Dwayne or somebody back there was dealing with the fryer grease. So there's some random unknown person extra that they've brought with them whose sole job in the tornado is to apparently to take care of the grease.
Never mind. She's like worried about what her insurance policy covers.
Right. Meanwhile, like there were breakables flying off shelves like crazy, but we're going to worry about the fryer grease. So I just thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, Granny is a character, man. I was happy to see a little bit more of her this episode, even if it was just for some comedic relief. But they take Granny's diner and they send it through the portal to the Enchanted Forest that Regina is able to redirect after Zelina opens it in order to go to Oz. Because never underestimate Regina. She may be, but she's not dumb. So she is able to get it to go to the Enchanted Forest. They all land there, la-di-da. And now let's cut to Emma and Rumple. Now, it's Rumple, but it's not really Rumple. It's sort of the imagination of Emma that we're seeing portrayed next to her. So a while ago in one of my like preview posts, I kind of predicted that it was going to be like Avatar The Last Airbender, because I've been watching that a lot, where they can communicate with the past avatars and, you know, like learn what's going on, what the deal is, like, you know, how to behave, how to do things right. And that's kind of what Emma's doing. She's talking to Rumple, who is just one of the past Dark Ones, but it's the one that she's most comfortable with. It's the one she knows the voice of, because he even says in his, like, spirit form, like, oh, you don't want to talk to me? You could talk to someone else. And he, like, gives another Dark One. Like, so she can really be talking to any of the Dark Ones before him, but it's just easier to have Rumple, which is kind of breaking the fourth wall, because it's like, listen, you already know me. I'm under an acting contract. It's really just easier to have me next to you. So what did we think of this dream Rumple? Do we like him? Do we not like him? Is he familiar enough for us?
So technically he's not. So here's my thing. Technically he's not really the dream Rumple. He's just sort of like the embodiment of all of the previous Dark Ones, and it's just the voice of Dark One that Emma is most familiar with. So basically, like, her mind has conjured the Dark One voice within her head in the personification of Rumple, right? Like, it could have been the Fire Beast, it could have been anything, but her mind has warped it into Rumple. Is that not how it works?
Well, I don't think it's quite that, because, like, she didn't know the other one, the boar, like, with the fire or whatever it was. So I don't think it's her imagination. Like, I think it's very real, but I think that, you know, the easiest way to communicate with her is through Rumple. Because if you think about it, what is the Dark One trying to do? It's trying to get Emma to embrace her new powers. The easiest way to do that is to put a familiar face in front of her and be like, you know me, you know, I can convince you to do the things that you don't want to do. Whereas if it was somebody completely different, like somebody she didn't know at all, I don't think she would necessarily give in quite nearly as quickly.
Yeah, and I definitely think that, I mean, he's clearly, Emma can only see him. No one else can. He's just sort of like there to her. Or at least that's how I took it. Did
yeah,
like, take it that way.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Nobody else sees him. Or at least that's certainly how I took it. Nobody else sees this personification of him at all. Yeah.
Yeah, especially when she's with Merida, I was like, she definitely doesn't see him. So it was all Emma.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so he's kind of her mentor in a way, I guess, in some weird dreamlike reality that Emma conjures up. Rumple is sort of guiding her through the process of being the Dark One, but his main intention is to get her to give over to the darkness completely. Like, he's like, it's so much easier, you know, this scaly look isn't as bad as it, like, you know, you think it is. Just give in to it and your life will be so much easier, because we see Emma running through the forest trying to ask people for help and not being able to control her powers. So what do we think about her darkness as a whole? Like, is she in control of it? Is she not in control of it? Does she really just need to focus? Like, how do we think this whole thing works?
I'm like, really, I kind of like the idea that you still have some sort of free will. Like, Emma seems like she's absolutely fighting it. I mean, even though it's hard to control, like, she's accidentally choking this guy and there are moments where she's practically strangling Merida, but it does seem like there certainly is like a degree of free will involved here. So I'm curious how this, like, how much of that will control it, or is it really true, like you said, like they were talking about how you can only fight it for a little time and then you like the power so much and now somebody else has to get you out of it.
Well, I also was kind of, this is kind of a silly comparison, but I've related it to like newbie vampire lore. Like they always talk about how newbie vampires are really more powerful first turned and then they become a little less as time goes on. Like I kind of feel like the darkness is really like the power that she absorbed is coming, it's coming out of her whether she wants it to or not right now. Like she's trying to hold it back and trying to control it, but because it's fresh and new, she doesn't really know how to do anything. Because like if you think about it, Rumpel or Gold, like he didn't always do evil. Like he did do good things occasionally, or he would do things that were not entirely evil all the time too. So it makes me think that she just, like, if she not necessarily embraces it, but figures out how to control all of this power that's just bouncing around inside of her. Like, she's standing in front of Merida and her hand just starts shaking. Like, she, I think she literally just has no control over what's going on right now.
Yeah, I think so too, especially because she is realizing that she is the one who is doing all of this stuff after the fact, especially like when she was choking the peddler and she's with Merida. Like she's realizing it's sort of a subconscious thing, especially like when Merida is shooting the arrows at her and she's just able to catch them. Like she's not thinking about that. It's just instinct taking over. Right. So this is like one of those weird, like, buried instincts that she now has to just deal with. So I like the vampire comparison though, because it's one of those like instinct things where, like, you know, I don't know why I'm thinking of this. I don't like Twilight, but like when Edward is able to just like jump in front of that van, like that's just something like that happens. Like he just knows it's coming and it's like this sixth sense that he doesn't even have to think about and respond to. Whereas this darkness is like that. And she just doesn't know when she's tapping into it and when she's not tapping into it. Interesting. There's a ton more that's going to be coming with this. I think this is really going to be Emma's season. So it'll be interesting to see how far she really goes with this darkness, especially when we talk about the final scene, which we'll get to in a little bit. But along her journey, we run into Merida, which is Once Upon a Time's first Pixar character. And I think they nailed it. This Merida. So first of all, let's take a tally here. How many people have seen Brave?
I have.
Me too.
I have not.
Okay, perfect. So let's start with Karen and Kristen. What did you think of Merida compared to the Merida from the Brave movies?
She was, I think, as close to perfect as we can really get. I mean, her voice, her mannerisms, her spunky personality, it was all there right from the movie. I was really hesitant at first. I mean, when we first saw her, like, I tend to not look at too many spoilers. So I didn't really see, like, her introduction ahead of time. So when she came on screen, I was like, oh, God, what is this going to be like? Are they going to totally ruin this? Because Merida is a really cool character, and she's really different from the other princesses out there. And they got it all right. And I really, really love it.
Yeah, I really like Merida. I like the actress they've got. Her hair is a little tense, but it's supposed to be that intense. Like, I like her a lot. The only thing that kind of bothers me is that she is not, like, she's a little more like skinny mini Merida than the version that Pixar specifically put out. Like, she's not supposed to be the perfect looking pretty skull. Like, Merida was kind of built to be a little bit of a different kind of princess. And so it bothers me a little bit that, yeah, she's the spunky, you know, spitfire that you expect her to be, but just physically, she's not what I, you know, she's not the Merida I always picture. So, like, when you look at her costume, even on Once Upon a Time, and she's got the blue dress, but it's, like, split up by the off-white little pieces from where, in the movie, she ripped her dress because it was too small because they were trying to confine her. Like, they kept the detailing of the dress splitting, but they made it look purposeful added edging and stuff to it. So it kind of rubbed me a little weird because that's one of the bigger things that came out of, like, everyone was talking about how Merida was not just another Cinderella or another Belle. Like, she's a little different. So, but other than that, they got the character spot on.
See, now, I really liked her a lot because, I mean, and I know nothing about Brave, so I liked the character. I remember thinking, gee, that accent isn't really overdone, and then I Googled the actress, and I'm like, oh, goody, she's Scottish anyway, so yay. Authenticity. I just thought the character was very interesting. I'm interested in it. The only thing that I did find annoying, and I'm kind of with you on this one, Kristen, was the hair thing. Now, I understand she's supposed to have, like, this really unruly red hair. Now, as someone who actually does, in fact, possess unruly, curly red hair, I had a problem with it being just, I thought it was just incredibly fake looking. And it was funny because I looked at the actress and she's got naturally curly hair. And she's even been in roles where it's naturally brown, but they've dyed it red. And I was really kind of annoyed that they couldn't have just dyed the actress's hair red and just let it go frizzy or gone with a wig that looked a little bit better. I was just kind of, I don't know. I would have liked to have seen her hair just look a little bit better. I don't know. Maybe that's like what people want, but I just thought it looked a little too fake, like almost a little too like anime hair. You know how like anime hair is like really like crazy almost? Like to me, that's almost what it looked like, and I did not like that aspect of it.
I'll say that in terms of matching Merida from the movie, I mean, the hair is exact, like exact same color. Works on a cartoon character, doesn't quite work on a real person.
Yeah. And like I said, I mean, I have that hair type. Like, I just felt like, you know, like growing up as a kid with the curly red hair and having to deal with like 3 million comments of like, where did you get your curly red hair from? Can I touch it? Oh, good. Your hands are already in my hair, pulling on it. Thank you so much for invading my space. I just felt like they could have just given her, like, the legit hair that we have. I don't know. Maybe it's me being too sensitive, but I just felt like they could have really just, you know, dyed the gal's hair red and that would have worked. In a shade that red hair actually comes with. I mean, yeah, there are plenty of us who have more orangey hair than others, but it was just, I felt like it was too cartoony and they could have done a better job with it.
Well, beyond her hair.
Oh, I love the rest of her, but I just didn't like the hair, but I really very much liked it. Like if, I mean, I'm sure part of Once Upon a Time's incentive is if you have not seen these characters before, do you like this character enough that you are now going to go out and check out their movie and maybe buy the DVD? And, you know, obviously they have a goal in mind. I was interested enough in the character that I said, oh, I really now want to go watch this movie. Whereas I think last year I was not incredibly motivated enough to go watch Frozen, but this year I'm motivated enough to want to go out and get Brave.
Yeah, and I think that'll be beneficial only so far as knowing where Merida is coming from, because there are a lot of mentions in this episode as to what Merida is facing right now. So in, like, she, I don't want to spoil the movie, but she's kind of facing this new kingdom. Her father has since the movie died, and her kingdom has sort of ousted her, which was not how the movie ended. And her brothers are gone. And there's a lot of like references to things that are to come in her story that I think are interesting because Eddie and Adam were very adamant about continuing her story, not dwelling on the Merida of the past, but like, this is what happened in Brave. We're kind of writing her next chapter. If there were to be a Brave 2, it might be the in-between chapter or whatever, but it's the next chapter in her story, and it's a few years removed from the movie. So Merida's grown up a bit since the movie, which I really loved. I love the development and that she has this quest that she's going on herself. So she'll be back, which is great. But Karen and Kristen, what did you think of like the movie plugs that they kind of threw in there, if you picked them up?
I liked that they didn't, like, it's nice to know that this is post-movie. Like, you, if you've watched the movie, her talking about her father having passed and her brothers, and you kind of get the impression, okay, I know exactly where we are. Like, Marima's, you know, we're past the movie, we know where we are. I liked the little bits about her dad, because it made me kind of think back to the movie, like, oh, you know, like, okay, he died, okay, all right, I got it. Like, things like that. Just, it wasn't anything specific throwback-wise that I was like, you know, oh, that's from the movie, but it did make me kind of think back to what I remember seeing.
Yeah, I always really like it when they do things like after the movie. I mean, they did that with Frozen 2, like Anna and Kristoff were already together and they were planning their wedding and everything. And I think people don't want to watch the same things, even though this is live action versus the animated. They don't want to watch the same story. They want to know what comes afterwards. And I think that's a really strong pull with two, you know, potential franchises, I guess, coming to Once Upon a Time. Is like, people really love Brave and people really love Frozen, and I think getting to know what's happening afterwards is going to be a huge pull for fans of those things and also fans of Once Upon a Time, because we want to see how it ties in with everything. So I really appreciated the fact that they decided to go beyond the movie and give us a new storyline, because now we won't know what's coming.
I have to tell you, the one, and obviously, like I said, I don't know anything about Brave, but I did have sort of a crossover moment watching the scene. For a minute there, I was like, oh my God, it's Once Upon a Time meets Outlander. I mean, all of a sudden, in a circle of standing stone, there is a girl with a Scottish accent.
Oh, I didn't even think about the stones being the same as Outlander.
Oh my gosh. And I'm sitting here going, oh my God, it's like Brianna going through the standing stones. Like, I was having a total Outlander moment there. And I even tweeted it, and I said that moment when I seem to be having an Outlander Uwat crossover, and everybody starts tweeting me, because Sam Heughan, who's the main character on Outlander, who plays Jamie Fraser, was in this sort of, I don't know, hottest UK actor contest or something. I'm not really clear where the contest was, but in any case, it was him and Colin O'Donoghue who were down for, like,
oh, yeah, and they had to dress like each other.
Right, and then, like, Sam Heughan won the contest, and, like, anyway, long story short, in this whole thing, people are all going, oh, is that what it's about? I was like, no, that's not what it's about. I said, if you really want my Outlander and Uwat lives to really cross over, like in season 3, if we ever get there in Outlander, there's a really good potential part for Colin O'Donoghue to have a character named Stephen Bonnet. So I am holding out hope that there is actually a bigger Outlander Once Upon a Time crossover to be had, other than, like, you know, Colin and Sam trying to out-hot UK Eric act each other, you know, or
I'm always down for that.
Or like random standing stones. Like, I'm actually really hoping that at some point these two fandoms can collide, because there's an awful lot of UK and Scottish based actors in Once Upon a Time, and I would really love to see some crossover going on.
That would be interesting. But while we're on, like, the subject of, like, these symbolic things making their way into Once Upon a Time, another thing that Once Upon a Time does really well is take these items from stories and sort of, like, use them in different ways. So, like, they're the stories we already know, but they're kind of new. So, in this, before we're going to go to Camelot. I promise we're going to Camelot right after this. But before we do, Gold is, like, basically dying in Storybrooke. He's just chilling in his pawn shop. So he's my favorite character so far. He doesn't say anything stupid or get himself in trouble or make me hate him because he's just lying there. But Blue gives Belle a flower, a rose to be.
I loved it.
Okay, great. Because I did too. She gives Belle a rose because Belle's afraid to leave Rumpel's side. Why? I still have no idea.
Exactly. I'm so mad about this.
It's only because because they wanted her the flower. That's why. That's the only reason why.
I feel like they were like, but we have this flower. We need to use it somehow.
We got the rights. Let's use the flower.
Exactly. Yeah. So they gave Belle, Blue gives Belle the rose, and she's like, when the last petal falls, Rumple will die. And I'm like, oh, thank God.
I know, we're like, wait, I know. And we're going, defoliate, come on, right?
Now we've got an hourglass, we just have to wait for the petals. All right, come on.
Laura, now I'm saying defoliate and, like, exterminate.
I got that Doctor Who reference.
Guys. There you go. I'm just working all my fandoms into today's show. Don't worry. They're all going to be taking part. I'll figure a way to get how to get away with murder in there at some point, too. I don't know.
I'm just going to start singing Hamilton because I can't work it in any other way.
Can we just talk about Hamilton? Who cares about Once Upon a Time?
Jealousy is radiating out of my soul. Go ahead.
I'm very sorry.
I'm not.
So, Camelot, we finally make it there. But before we actually get into the walls of Camelot, we meet Lancelot back from the dead. Well, not really back from the dead. It's a flashback. So we meet Lancelot and King Arthur. Well, not yet king. I should really work on my speech. So Lancelot, undead, Arthur, before he's the king, and their friend Percival. And they're off to get Excalibur. They want to get the sword from the stone, but when they do, they pull it out and it's missing a very important part of the sword, which I thought was one of the best reveals Once Upon a Time has ever done in the history of the show. They pull out the sword and it's, you can see the design as it nears the tip of the sword, which is missing, and that is the tip of the Dark One's dagger, which I think is just it's so good. There's going to be so much more to come from the Excalibur backstory, and it's just, it's the perfect way, in my opinion, to tie it in to the mythology of the show. So you guys kind of chimed in, but what did we think of that?
Brilliant. I just thought it was perfect.
Yeah, I knew, like, right away, like, the second it was coming out, I was like, oh, no. And then it comes out, I'm like, wow. I was like, yeah, I knew, like, pretty much from the second they started pulling it out.
Yeah, like, as the camera gets closer and you get the detailing, you can tell, and you're like, that is the same, like, that's the same detailing on the end of the dagger, and you can see it coming, and then it comes out, and it's missing the end, and you're like, yeah. I just love how it clearly is going to tie into Emma's story. Like, we knew Camelot was coming, we knew Merida was coming, we've kind of, in this first episode, seen all three major pieces of what we know is going to make up this season already kind of tying together. And I love that. Like, rather than having a storyline over here and a storyline over there, and this is also happening, like, everything is working together really well so far.
Yeah, and everyone is already in the enchanted world of this episode. Everyone makes it to Camelot, and I'm glad we don't have, like, them looking for Emma in the Enchanted Forest for two episodes or anything like that.
Now, right.
Yeah, the house is there. Well, the house Granny's is there. They find Emma, and they bring the dagger with them. So when they find Emma, she is confronting Merida because Merida has this spirit called the Will of the Wisps, which are from the Brave movie and, you know, Scottish folklore. So if you catch a Will of the Wisp and you whisper to it what you want, it will take you to what you want. And Emma wants to catch it because she wants to get to Camelot. And Merida wants to catch it because she wants to get back to her brothers and fight for her kingdom and make me want to talk in a Scottish accent because it's the only way I can talk about Merida when I think about her. But yeah, so she has the Will of the Wisp and Emma wants to take it from her. But she has this little devil Rumple on her shoulder telling her, like, well, just take it from her then. Like, there's no reason for you to just not use your power. You can have whatever you want. And I like what Rumple's doing. I love this whole Emma tumbling into darkness thing. I want to see Emma evil so badly. But at the same time, it's kind of annoying. Like, I'm in Emma's shoes. I'm like, I want to give into the darkness because I want to see where that takes Emma. But at the same time, I don't want to give Rumple the satisfaction. of taking her. So what did we think of that whole scene? Like, because Emma eventually, I'll fast forward a little bit, she takes out Merida's heart and she's clutching it as our heroes of Storybrooke catch up to her. So what did we think of her first real encounter with choosing between good and evil?
It's, I think it's almost like a little bit what I talk about with Hook. It's not so much that she's just willing to do plain evil. Like, it's not, I'm going to work my Doctor Who reference in right here. It's not like she's Missy from Doctor Who, that she's just going to snap her fingers and kill a couple random people. Cause like, what the heck today? It's definitely about the means to the end. It's all about the ends justify the means. Like, it's not that she's looking to be evil, but she needs this, and sacrificing this person's life or doing whatever this evil deed is more important than that person's life, because what she personally wants is more important. So I feel like it's all, it's like very selfish. It's like very, what are my immediate needs, and everything that I need supersedes everything else in the world. So that's kind of interesting. I'm wondering if it's going to build to some sort of moral quandary between her and Henry, because I feel like that's like the one stopping point for Emma, because like she even got mad at her own parents, and you understand that, but I feel like the only person that could maybe save her from herself, and I don't know if it'll come down to this, is maybe Henry. I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I feel like Emma has always been in a tough spot since we first met her. She was sort of like this kid showed up at a door and he's like, oh, you're the savior, by the way, so you have to deal with this now. And now she's in this position where it's like, oh, you're the dark one, so you have to kind of deal with this now. She's always had to like make these big decisions, and I think maybe this power is going to be testing her in different ways. Like, if she makes one selfish action, whether it's even just to save someone that she loves by using her darkness, you know, like that could turn her whole life around. She could easily give in to something else, and another thing, and another thing, and another thing. But we have a long time to get there.
Yeah. I'm also curious if like Emma's baby blanket like works back into this or somehow. Like, I remember how like she says like to Snow, well, I couldn't go carrying around her yellow beetle, so like I've got her baby blanket. So I'm just wondering if that baby blanket and memories of being a kid or whatever somehow work into it, and the baby blanket can certainly evoke those memories, whereas I don't think the car really would, aside from the fact that Regina couldn't carry it.
I'm just, from, I don't know what it was that you said, Brittany, but something triggered my brain, and just, it's making me wonder if we're gonna have an Emma Henry like parallel to Bay and Rumple. Like, he has to choose following Bay into, you know, following Bay into a powerless place so that he can escape, or being the Dark One. Like, it's, especially now that we've seen the end of this episode and we know what's going on with Emma, you know, 6 weeks later or whatever. But I'm wondering if that's something that might come up later on. Could be interesting.
That would be really interesting, I think. Yes, we have all, like, there's just so much going on in the last 5 minutes of this episode were some of the best writing that Once Upon a Time has done. And so Emma decides not to crush Merida's heart on her own accord. Hook points out to her and the group that they cannot compel her. They should not use the dagger to make her stop. She needs to make the decision on her own. And she does. She gives Merida back her heart. Merida makes a witty retort, takes the will of the wisp, and goes on her way. And so now we're left. Emma goes back with her family and friends and Hook, thank God. And so she's with them. But the big decision that she has to make is who should have the dagger. Now, her parents want her to have the dagger. They trust her or whatever. They're too mushy for my liking all the time. And I still don't like that she calls them homage. But she makes the decision to give the dagger to Regina, because Regina is the only person who will put her feelings aside and make the right decision. What did you guys think of that decision? Like, do you think it was the right decision?
Yeah, I feel like she had to give it to Regina on a couple of levels. One, Regina has fought a similar battle and won, so that makes sense. She's got powerful magic in of her own. And I feel there's also the connection to Henry. So I feel like all three of those things, like, she had to be the choice. I mean, if otherwise, like, who would she give it to? I don't think there's anybody else who was there who is a sane and rational human being that would understand Emma's side of it. Like, maybe Belle might come the closest, but even Belle, I don't think, would totally get it. I feel like Regina is the perfect one to get everything.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, a couple months ago when, like, I interviewed the cast at SDCC, prior to that, was looking back at all the questions that could come up, like things that we could end up talking about. And one of the things that I kind of looked at was who should hold her dagger. Like, and in my own head, the only person that felt right to me was Hook, because I thought he would be the least likely to use her for his own purpose. Like, if Hook had the dagger, he would not want to use Emma or to himself. If Regina is truly on the right path now, which it sounds like she is, I think she's also now an excellent candidate, especially considering it was Emma's choice as to who should hold it, because I can see where Emma wants someone who will make the tough choice and put the dagger through her, if that's what necessary hasn't. But, you know, back when I was thinking about it, Hook was not a bad idea just because he would do what was right by Emma, not necessarily what was right by everyone else. So, like, it depends on what you put priority on as to who should be there. Because I thought some really good arguments from people on why the Charming should hold it, or why Henry should hold it. And so it's really an interesting idea that Regina gets it.
Yeah. Karen, who do you think should have the dagger?
I definitely think Regina should. I think that everybody else is too emotionally invested in Emma. Not that I don't think Regina doesn't like her or anything like that, but if you think about it, like, okay, totally agree the Charmings are too mushy. Like, they would never be able to do anything about it. And I think Hook, while I totally agree with you, Kristen, like, he would never use her for his own ends, I also think he wouldn't be able to make that tough call that Regina can make. So I think Regina's just balanced enough that she feels like, you know, she's going to do whatever it takes to save Emma, except, you know, when it comes down to it, she's also going to be able to say, look, we tried everything we could. The only thing that's left is to kill her. And I think that, you know, she's going to be able to do that. Hopefully it doesn't come to that. Obviously, I don't think it's going to. But yeah, I think Regina at this point is going to be the most level-headed person.
Yeah, I am in full agreement. I think Regina she was my choice from the beginning. As soon as the dagger fell and Hook picked it up, I was like, oh, yes, Hook. But then I was like, that's not logical. He's, as we saw in the opening of this episode, he's not thinking. He is too scattered. He's too nervous. He doesn't want to lose her again, whereas Regina's like, this idiot is now the Dark One, and she's our problem. So I think that she already, like, pitched herself as the perfect candidate from her opening line in this episode. But anyway, they all make it to – they go hand in hand off to Camelot, and they are welcomed by Arthur and his kingdom, because Merlin predicted that – Emma would be on her way eventually. Who knows how long it's been since the end of the flashbacks. But they're there. Then all of a sudden, we flash forward to 6 weeks later, and Granny's lands back in Storybrooke with everyone in it, in their finest Camelot garb, which I loved the costuming. But Emma is just completely dark now. She has the white slicked back hair, the full on the black outfit, and she has possession of her dagger. So what happened? I mean, we have 6 weeks worth of time to make up for it. No one remembers what's going on except Emma. She's mad at Hook. She's mad at her parents. She's mad at Regina. Henry was too far back for it to catch a glare, but I'm sure he got one. she's completely come undone. So do you guys have any theories as to what happened in Camelot?
The only thing that I can think of, you know, because she has her dagger back, how did that happen? Regina must have given it to her. Okay, so why would Regina give it to her? Probably something to do with Henry. I don't know. I feel like, you know, maybe Emma was so far gone that she threatened Henry and Regina gave that up. But, like, that scares me. You know, if Emma goes that far, how is she ever going to come back? And if she does come back, when she comes back, let's be real, you know, what kind of damage will she have done to her relationship with Henry and everybody else?
Most importantly, her relationship with Hook. I mean, Henry will get over it, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think you've absolutely called that right. I think Regina would sacrifice her own life, but I think she would do anything to protect Henry. So I think that would be a pretty powerful motivator if somehow giving up that dagger meant protecting Henry. That does make a lot of sense.
Especially because Regina knows... What if Emma hurt Henry, what that would do to Emma if she came out of the situation. Mm-hmm. Like, now, it would break her, too.
Now, here's a question, because we've certainly played this game before. Who's to say she's a great dagger?
I don't think anyone's smart enough to pull that off. I mean, I don't think anyone in the hero group... Maybe Hook would have thought of it, but...
Maybe Belle. Like, I'm just thinking, like, if they took the same page out of the history the last time. I mean, they swapped the daggers around. I mean, I'm just wondering if, you know, it's... Although I would assume the Dark One would know if they were holding the right dagger.
Yeah, that's true. This is sort of a role reversal in a way. Like, she's in possession of the dagger. It's not a non-Dark One holding it. Yeah.
I was going to say, the only way I think you could pass off the Dark One holding a fake dagger would be if Merlin was involved. Like, 6 weeks went by. We don't know whether they found Merlin, talked to Merlin, figured out what was going on. If somehow he was involved, created a fake dagger that would even fool the Dark One, that would be the only way you could have a fake one in her hand, and she'd believe it was hers.
That's true, and she probably could have been, like, Merlin could have been threatening to take away her darkness, and she could have been like, peace out, I'm taking my whole crew back to Storybrooke.
Yeah, right, seriously. Like, and I'm out, yeah. So, no, Sam.
Well, speaking of Merlin, we met him for a hot second. In the first, like, 2 seconds of the episode, he was a movie theater usher, and he went to Emma before any of this happened. She was very small. She was like 5 or something. And she went to go see The Sorcerer in the Stone, which is clearly a rebroadcast because that movie is a lot older than 1989. But
yeah,
she went to go see The Sword in the Stone in the movie theater. And she swiped a candy bar from an unsuspecting woman. But basically, Merlin was like, do not take Excalibur. Now,
so maybe that's what the problem is. Maybe exactly what she did.
Yeah, maybe she left with both pieces and she's going to reconnect Excalibur.
Right, which could be super bad. I mean, that would be super bad. Yeah, I mean, that's in this kingdom, it could be like holding the most powerful magic wand ever. So, yeah.
I have a question about the usher, because were we meant to know that was Merlin? Did I just miss something?
Well, I don't know if you were meant to know it was Merlin, but if you read any casting announcement over the summer, it was Merlin.
Okay.
Okay. Good to know.
So it wasn't necessarily, it's the worst kept secret, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So, spoiler, that was Merlin. Yeah, that was Elliot Knight. He is playing Merlin. And I think it was, they did not say it outright, but I think they tried to do it in a way where you have the Merlin, the Disney Merlin everyone kind of knows, played against this other Merlin as we're watching the young kid take the sword out of the stone. You know, like it's sort of like, you know, playing with your mind. But sorry if I spoiled anything, but it's
Merlin.
Oh, we'll survive. That's fine.
Yeah. That is our Merlin for the season. Hopefully we'll get to know a bit more about him soon, and we'll get to meet everyone else from Camelot soon as well, in the next couple of weeks, which will be fantastic. I'm looking forward to getting to know our Camelot lore a bit more.
So speaking of lore and like characters popping up in unexpected places, did anybody else go, so when did Disney acquire One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was
Nurse
like,
Ratched?
Nurse Ratched, and then Chief Brompton is like mopping up as the orderly. I was like, that was like my WTF moment of the episode. I was like, does Disney really own this right now? I was just like,
yeah,
so stunned. It was just, I mean, I get they keep dropping in, because they even threw in a Star Wars reference at some point. There was something between Killian and Henry, and there was some sort of Star Wars reference, like, in there, too, which, like, all right, I get it. They own that catalog now, too. But, like, to me, there's, like, such a difference between a Star Wars reference, which is, like, in the same tone and almost kind of in the same wheelhouse as Once Upon a Time, versus One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which is, like, a very, like, serious, dramatic film. I was like, really? I was, like, very surprised.
Yeah, like, people joke about, like, Nurse Ratched. Like, yeah, you know, like, people right. make that comparison in pop culture all the time. But when he literally called her that and she answered to it, I didn't realize that that was supposed to be her name. And then I'm like, what is happening?
What? So, And like I said, and if you know the movie, then there's, or the play, obviously came from a play first, but like there's this second character called Chief Brompton who is an Indian, and there's this yeah. guy as the orderly, and I'm going, no. I was kind of surprised. So, and I tried Googling to see if like there was some sort of like Disney purchase of the picture, and I couldn't figure it out. So who knows? It's got to be.
Strange. Yeah. Very interesting, but definitely strange.
I didn't notice that, but good for you guys.
Yeah. I'm waiting for like the next like totally incongruous like film connection. I mean, it's just so strange. It would be like somebody making like a reference to like The English Patient in the middle of Once Upon a Time. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. So I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe the creators or the writers are fans of it, and they were just like, you know what'll be fun? This will go over some people's heads, but some people will appreciate it. But yeah, what are do we have any final thoughts on the episode or anything that we didn't talk about that we should talk about?
Can we talk about one thing? Sorry. Can we talk about Emma's look for a minute? Because I don't know how I feel about it. I think that her stepping into the shoes of the Dark One is huge, especially because Robert Carlyle is, like, incredible, and the way that he plays Rumple is just, like, astounding. And I think Emma going dark, I can already see bits of it, even when we first see her in the Enchanted Forest. Like, she's a little snappier, she's a little, like, she's got this darker look to her, her hair is all kind of, like, gross and in, hanging in sheets and around her face, and I think that it works really well for her, and she's doing a good job so far, but I'm worried that she's not going to be, one, scary enough, and two, just, like, her look and, like, the gray hair and the gray eyebrows and stuff, it just, it wasn't quite as terrifying as I was hoping it would be.
I loved it in the contrary position. I think that she looked so polished and just this, like, her posture changed and she's more ninja-y evil. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but I think maybe in a little while, like, when we see her more as the Dark One, it'll become a little bit clearer, but I could just imagine her, like, moving different ways and just, like, getting in people's faces, and I really, really like the way that they went with her look. Like, they didn't make it the same as Rumple, or they didn't, like, you know, it's just something completely new, and I really liked it. Anyone else have anything to talk about with this episode?
Well, it's not really necessarily the episode, but it's in general. Like, I know the one thing that really was kind of apparent at the roundtables this summer at SDCC was that Jennifer Morrison, like, the minute she found out what was going to be happening with Emma for this season, like when she found out last season at the end of the year with the script, she dove into her research. Like, she spent so much time getting into the head of a character that, you know, is one way and is the savior and is, you know, absolute good, and how that transition would work and what kind of damage it would do. And like, she really did her research when she sat down at the table and started talking about how she was going to play this character and like what was going to be going on for Emma. Like, she knew, she has a vision exactly what Emma is going to go through. So I'm really, really excited to see what kind of work we get out of Jennifer this season. Like, she's always been a staple. Like, she's always held her own in this cast and she's always been really great. I really think this season's going to be crazy intense and crazy good. And I'm just really, really excited about it.
I wish Jennifer Goodwin put as much thought into her role, because she just took Neil into Granny's, no stroller, nothing. Like, what are you going to do? Hold him in the Enchanted Forest the whole time? It was the one thing that annoyed me so much. I'm like, she is literally going to hold this baby for the whole time that they're in the Enchanted Forest in Camelot. I'm like, they don't have strollers in Camelot. Like, it annoyed me so much. Maybe there's one upstairs. I don't know. And I'm just being nitpicky, but she literally held that baby.
They did take all of Granny's, so you never know.
I know. I'm sure there's one in the back or whatever, but she just like walked in with the kid like, all right, let's go. I got everything. I'm like, you do not have everything. I'm like, you need a baby bag. You need some diapers.
I was thinking about that too, actually, because I was like, this seems like a terrible idea. You're getting sucked up into a tornado, and the only thing you are doing is cradling this child in your arms. And even when they fall down and they get back up and she's like checking the baby, I'm like, you definitely should have thought this through better. Like, why didn't you just stay home? Like, I realize it's kind of a big deal and everything, but you have another kid to take care of, and that one's an infant.
Anyway, that was my only minor pet peeve with the episode.
I will say, Kristen, you've just made me very excited for what she's going to be doing with Emma. I mean, I have faith. I like what I've seen so far, but I'm a little worried. Like, it's hard to follow in Rumple's footsteps, but considering what you've said with all the research that she's put into it, definitely very excited now.
Oh, yeah. Told us all kinds of stuff about going to the New York library and like having things pulled for her, and yeah, it was in, yeah, she's more than ready and really excited, I can tell you that much. So I was, yeah, I just, when you get an actor that's that excited about what they've got and they dive right into the research, like, you can't help but be excited too, because it's like, okay, she gets it. Like, she knows exactly what we are all hoping for, and that is really comforting.
It sounds fantastic. All right, let's wrap this bad boy up. So anything else, final words? I'm looking forward to Hook a lot. I missed him. I didn't know how much I needed him in my life until I went on Tumblr and saw all the gifts again. Very excited.
Still need more Robin. I'm going to be the Robin Hood cheerleader all season long. I know we all find this shocking, but yeah, I need more Robin Hood.
I miss Red.
She's coming.
I know. I was really hoping she'd be in this episode.
I don't know when, but she's coming.
I'm going to play the Henry card because he's the author and I want to know how that affects him. Like, it's not nothing. And I want to see what that means for him. And I want him to meet a girl or a boy. I don't care. But I want him to be a teenager. Like, he clearly isn't a little boy anymore. And so I just, yeah, I'm ready for Henry to kind of step into his own and become a major part of this whole thing rather than just the card everyone plays to manipulate Regina and Emma all the time.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. Henry needs something more to do.
Yeah.
After, like, I mean, he had a lot. He was great in that whole Peter Pan arc, and then he sort of just got sidelined again. So yeah, it's high time for him to come back. I thought he would be a much bigger role in Operation Mongoose, you know, when he was like going undercover and trying to like get stuff from Rumpel, but you know, that didn't pan out as well. So yeah, I'm ready for Henry to shine this season.
Yeah, he's 15. He's the only asexual teenager on the planet.
Yeah.
Ready. We're ready.
We're ready, Henry. We're waiting for you. Make us proud. All right. So this has been our inaugural season opener. We'll be back for the rest of this season, including the 100th episode, which we're going to hit in 10 more episodes, which is exciting. Not our 100th episode, but Once Upon a Time's 100th episode. Yeah, so we got lots of stuff coming this year. So I hope you're ready to spend the next 23 weeks with us. Yay. Oh, I know. That's so daunting. Oh my gosh.
But by the end, we'll be going, we're already here. It's the finale. What are you talking about?
I know. We'll have that really long hiatus where we'll be like, why isn't Once Upon a Time on anymore? Why do we have to wait 3 months? But anyway, tweet us, email us. Don't email us. I lied. Tweet us and let us know what you think. Comment on this post on Hypeable. And hopefully Jen will be up to joining us next week. But until then, I'm Brittany.
I'm Laura.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
Nailed it. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.